Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For decades, David Smale has covered sports in Kansas City, and the opportunity to watch this Kansas City Chiefs team win a Super Bowl was the cherry on top of his career covering his favorite football team. And in September, a new book that every Chiefs fan has to get, The Keys to the Kingdom, comes out. It's an illustrated timeline of the Kansas City Chiefs from the day they became the Dallas Texans to the day that Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl some 50 years after Super Bowl IV.
Well, it's amazing when the hometown team wins a championship. You get a lot of fans that really didn't know that the team existed pre, 2015 if you're a Royals fan, pre 2019, 2020 if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan. And going through your book, David, it really was awesome to see some of the great historical stuff that this franchise has really been a part of. And when you're telling the story of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Keys to the Kingdom, your book that's coming out a little bit later on this year, what do you think is the most significant story that needs to be told for fans and for folks who may not be familiar with the history of the Kansas City Chiefs?
That's a great question, Bob. And there's obviously a lot in there. And as you said, the Chiefs history goes way, way back. But I think maybe in light of what's going on in our country right now, maybe the most significant story is the impact that Lamar Hunt had on really integrating professional football. It was obviously there were pro football players who were African Americans, but when the AFL started and the Chiefs certainly were the leaders of that, they went after the historically black colleges and university players much more than the NFL did. The NFL might have picked a few of the very, very best, but the AFL did a lot more than that. And you look at back at some of the Chiefs who made an impact. During the AFL, Willie Lanier, Buck Buchanan, guys like that, Jim Marcellus, that played at those HBCUs, if it wasn't for Lamar Hunt, we might not have seen players of that caliber for another 10, 20 years, because this was in the pretty tumultuous 1960s that they were doing this.
Why do you think that story isn't told more? Like, why isn't that story celebrated more by the NFL and, by the organization of what Lamar Hunt really meant to football and to the growth of football, and especially with the historically black colleges and universities?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've actually tried to get hold of Clark Hunt to propose doing a book just on his dad in that light. Certainly it would be something that's very pertinent now, especially as a very successful white businessman, to take that risk. That's something that he could have, he had a lot to lose by doing that. Not only his place with professional football, but he had a lot of holdings and a lot of business interests outside of football, and it was risky. We talk about how risky it is to go counterculture right now. It's a lot. It was a lot riskier 50, 60 years ago.
And Lamar was able to do it and did it in a way where his team had success. I mean, for the last couple of months or so, we've talked to a lot of those guys from the 50th anniversary Super Bowl team, and you start to talk to all of them and you realize, man, that was a team that was set up to be a dynasty and then just absolutely fizzled after that longest game ever. What do you think happened with that, and why didn't that group of players, which has like 80 million Hall of Famers in it, why did they only win that one Super Bowl? What do you think went wrong?
I think it's maybe there's a similarity to the 2015 Royals in that they all aged at the same time. Now, in the case of the Royals, they all aged to free agency, and so the Royals couldn't keep them. I think with the Chiefs in 71, Dawson was mid-30s, and some of those other guys that were, Bobby Bell and Buck Buchanan that were drafted the same time were about 30. And so a lot of those players were reaching not the end of their careers, but past their prime all at the same time. You think about like the 1963 draft, which actually happened in December of 62, but we always credit the next spring. They got Buck Buchanan, Bobby Bell, Gerald Wilson, and Jim Tyre, I think, was the fourth one, who's a Chiefs Hall of Famer, in that draft. But those guys are all getting older. And so I think maybe that has something to do with it. Other than that, man, if I knew, I'd be a GM.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, too, what really is significant about this team is that when they moved to Kansas City, the NFL wasn't what it was today. I think for a lot of folks, you roll out of bed and you think, well, the NFL has always been the biggest thing since sliced bread. It really wasn't that day when they moved here to Kansas City. And, you know, everybody says, oh, Lamar took a chance on Kansas City. But Kansas City took a chance on Lamar, too, and anteing up and getting behind this franchise when they first started to arrive here.
Absolutely. My father-in-law tells me the story. I remember the Chiefs coming here, but I remember it as a five-year-old. I remember my dad being excited that, you know, we had professional football in town. So my recollections of some of the early years are just childish enthusiasm. But my father-in-law, who is now 85, remembers a lot more about the deal. And he remembers specifics, things like the Milgram's grocery stores, I don't even think exist anymore, sold tickets for the home games for $1 a piece, and just to get people in the stands, because one of the ways that the city convinced Lamar to choose Kansas City over the other options at that time was attendance. And they promised, you know, 25,000 people where they were getting 2,500 in Dallas. And so they had to live up to that. And so they, you know, they did anything and everything to get people in the seats.
You know, you have an opportunity and had an opportunity to do something really unique, and that's look at your favorite franchise from the day they started to the day they won the Super Bowl. I mean, that's kind of the realm of this book that you have out. Yeah. Is there a story that you went through and you're like, wow, this was such an amazing story. I wish we could have told the story longer. We could have told the story earlier in time. Like, what was kind of your like awakening moment?
You mean the whole book or a particular?
No, just a particular story in the book. Yeah.
How much time you got?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are so many. I've actually been able to reconnect with a couple of old players that I knew in some cases didn't know, but admired early on. But like, I became friends long after he retired with Curtis McClinton, and I've reconnected with him. He actually gave me some pictures that were used in the book. I tell people my first favorite Chief was Chris Burford, who was a wide receiver out of Stanford. He was actually the club's first draft pick in 1960. He was an All-American. My very first Chiefs jersey was in 88, and that was long before Tony Gonzalez was even born. You know, before Morris Stroud was here, and I just always liked 88. Well, Chris Burford was the reason. And I read an article recently that Vahe Gregorian did in the Star that talks about what an overused word, but what a hero Chris Burford was to his teammates, because you know, when they were in Dallas in early 1960s, they had the black players had to eat at different restaurants and stay in different hotels, and Burford, who is white, would lead the charge saying, no, you guys are my teammates. If you're not welcome there, I'm not going there. And he went out of his way to make those black players feel like they were a part of things. And I think that's one of the reasons the Chiefs were able to outbid some NFL teams, because of the culture of the team led by people like Chris Burford. I never knew that before doing this particular book. And then, of course, the timing with Vahe's article made it even better. So reliving some of that, some of my own memories. I did this whole book in 2 weeks, and I did it mostly from from memory, and then I used the internet obviously to back up stats and time on the clock and scores and things like that. But just to, like, I wrote the story about the Chiefs Huddle Club. I was a part of the Chiefs Huddle Club in 1968. People who are paying lots and lots of money, taking a second mortgage on their house to get season tickets. I joined the Huddle Club in 1968 for $5, and I got a windbreaker and a picture of Curtis McClinton, Lynn Dawson, and Tori Southwick, who was a kid's daytime. They would do cartoons, but they had an in-studio thing, and Tori was a big deal here. So I had those three pictures, this windbreaker, and a ticket to every home game. So 10 home games, eight, because this was in the 14-game season. So 8 home games and all this other stuff for $5. So I got in for 50 cents. And so I told this story about the Huddle Club, and I remember my 10th birthday, we were playing the hated Raiders, and Nolan Smith, who was known as Super Nat because he was tiny and just tremendously quick, took a punt around his own 40, went to the right sideline, which is straight down. I was looking down that north sideline, and he ran straight down that sideline for a touchdown. Chiefs won 24-10, but I felt like he was going to keep running through the back of the end zone, up the steps, and sit down next to me. And that's how much you felt a part of the team. And I have felt a part of the team, sometimes from a distance, sometimes up close, for, 57 years. And that's, so I put in my introduction, this book, I wrote it for me. And I hope you guys enjoy it too, but I wrote it for me because it let me relive some of those memories.
So with this franchise, I mean, usually when you get one in town, they're awful, they're no good. This team came to town and they were winners right away. Was the love affair with the Chiefs in the 1960s when they came to town right away like it is now, where this town just absolutely fell in love right from Jump Street with the Chiefs, or did it take some time?
Now you're really stretching me. Like I said, I was 5 years old. Remember their very last game as the Dallas Texans, they won the 1962 AFL championship. So people knew that they were getting a good team. They may not have been an NFL caliber team, but they were the best that this league had to offer. And that's the opportunity that Kansas City had. They still had to do some marketing to get the attention. But when my family moved away in 1969, I remember that the list for people to get on to get season tickets, the waiting list was longer than the list of people who held season tickets. So they could have more than doubled the capacity with that much interest. And, obviously the mid to late 70s and most of the 80s dissipated that interest. And I give Carl Peterson and Marty Schottenheimer a lot of credit for bringing that back.
Yeah, there's no question, and I was going to kind of roll into that with you right now. And, again, a lot of folks in their 20s have no idea that the 70s and 80s existed, and Arrowhead was a ghost town at that point in time. And I always say the two most important hires in the history of Kansas City sports are Dayton Moore and Carl Peterson, and both of those guys turned around those franchises. And maybe somebody would argue, Andy Reid or something right now, but without Carl Peterson, we may not have a franchise here to get Andy Reid. Where are you on the significance and importance of Carl Peterson?
I think you're right on, Bob, because without what Carl Peterson did, Andy Reid wouldn't have come here. We know that there were a lot of teams that were interested in Andy Reid when the Eagles made the wonderful decision to fire him. And I tell in the book that he was at his farewell party with the Eagles, and he got the call from Clark Hunt. And Clark had one question for Andy, and Andy had one question for Clark. And Clark's question for Andy is, do you want to do this again? Andy said, yes. Andy's question for Clark, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, Andy's question for Clark is, why should I want to do it there? And Clark told him, we're going to change things, and you're the guy for it. But without the level of fan interest that strictly goes back to Carl Peterson, I don't think Andy would have considered it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So that being said, who do you think had the harder job? Like Jack Stedman and company bringing a new franchise to town, or Carl Peterson recreating interest and rejuvenating a fan base in Kansas City?
I would say Peterson, because, you had with Stedman and Lamar in the early days, they had to develop interest, but they did have a little bit of a track record saying, hey, we know how to win games. If you want to follow a winner, you've got that here. And they just had to draw up interest. But Bob, I'm a big K-State fan. I think that I wrote a book a few years ago called The Greatest Turnaround in College Football History about Bill Snyder's first 5 years. And my premise was he didn't start from ground zero to build that program. he started from well below zero. And really, that's what Carl and obviously Marty with him had to do. They were bad. They weren't starting from scratch. They had to dig out of a hole before they could get to scratch.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why I consider Carl the most important hire, you know, for the Chiefs and whatnot. Yeah. And then he brings in Marty, he brings in Derek Thomas, you bring in Joe Montana, you bring in Marcus Allen, and then boom, as they say, the rest is history. They never were able to complete the deal and get to that Super Bowl and win that Lamar Hunt trophy for Lamar Hunt, but obviously we were able to do that, and as they say, the rest is now history. So that being said, and looking at this franchise as a whole, what do you think is the most kind of, I guess you could say, important story that people need to know about this franchise, whether it relates to an individual, whether it relates to the team as whole? What's the most important story that the Kansas City Chiefs have told over their 60 plus years now in existence?
Man, I wish you'd sent me the questions ahead of time. I would have had some time to prepare for that one. I know it sounds really cliche, but I think even in the worst of times, this town, or this team rather, reflected this area, the town, the Midwest, you know, the Chiefs Kingdom stretches several states. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, I don't want to say it's not all about winning, excuse me, but it's more than about winning, or about more than winning, whatever the better way to say that is. It's about taking care of your family. And, you know, the Chiefs are a family. You hear, you know, I remember watching the 79 World Series and the Pittsburgh Pirates, go, you know, sing along to We Are Family and stuff like that. And they didn't get along at all. And that was total ruse. But I really believe that this team from the top down, from Lamar Hunt and then to Clark Hunt, operates as a family. Same way the Royals do with Dayton Moore saying, we're going to pay all our minor leaguers. You know, I think both of those teams reflect this community in this region very well. And maybe that's the story. Maybe that's the story of the whole franchise and why it's important. You know, in an email I sent to you, I wrote that I think getting to the Super Bowl was bigger this past year than winning the Super Bowl. Because first of all, and I didn't explain why, first of all, they got the Lamar Hunt trophy given to Lamar's son and wife. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's almost like reaching the Final Four is bigger than winning the national championship.
Yeah.
Just ask a Missouri fan. You know, getting there is a really big deal. And I didn't choke up when I was writing about the 71 AFL or the AFC champion or AFC playoff game on Christmas Day when I cried like a baby at 12 years old when that actually happened. But I got choked up as I was writing about the victory over the Titans in this year's AFC championship game. It moved me big time, even writing about it a couple of months later.
Why did that one move you more than anything else? Why do you think you had that kind of reaction to it?
Probably because I remember the first Super Bowl, and I remember the fourth Super Bowl, and I remember the 50 years in between, that it was like, okay, we can get that monkey off our backs regardless of what happens in Miami. We're back. We've been back in the Super Bowl. Part of it, obviously, is the confidence that with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes locked up, and at that point we didn't know how long Patrick would be locked up, I had confidence we could make it back even if we didn't win it this year. But I had seen so many times when we were, you know, that close and didn't make it that, okay, we're over that hump. I think that's why.
Yeah, and obviously it was the first time for basically all of us to see it. I mean, 50 years is a long time since the last one. You're one of the fortunate who was able to see that. You know,
one of the old guys, yeah.
Yeah, one of the old guys that can, you know, we can sit around your knee and you can tell the stories of that Super Bowl IV team. But what do you think was the biggest reason why they went 50 years without getting back to the Super Bowl?
And this sounds so cliche, quarterback.
I would have said the same thing.
Okay. You know, Lenny was great, but Lenny was drafted in 1957. So, you know, in 1970, 69, 70, he was, what, 30, 31 years old. Mm-hmm. And is that right? No, he was born in 35, so he was 35 years old. when they won the Super Bowl, or just about to turn 35 years old. I think his birthday's in the early spring. And so he was getting old, and run through the list of quarterbacks they've had since then. And other than Joe Montana late in his career, and he got us to the AFC Championship game.
Right.
Name one that is anywhere close to Hall of Fame caliber. I mean, Bill Kenny held the record for yards in a season from, you know, in 1983 until Patrick in 2018. And Bill Kenny was good, but he, you know, not Hall of Fame. I was on a radio station in St. Louis yesterday, and they said, why did it take so long? And I said, you know, the statistic that we don't like to quote, but we often quote around here, is the last quarterback the Chiefs drafted to win a regular season game for the Chiefs was Todd Blackledge, and he just finished up his 25th year in broadcasting. You know, that's a long time ago. And they just, if you don't have a really, really good quarterback, if not a great quarterback, your chances of winning are really, really slim.
Yeah. So when you look back at this project, and the book's going to be released right at the beginning of the regular season, I'm guessing, right at the beginning of September. When you look back at this project, did you have a favorite story that you were able to take away from it and couldn't wait to write about it? Or do they all kind of resonate as awesome now because this team went on and won a championship?
I think probably the latter, Bob. It's just, you know, you and I have known each other for a long time. You know, I'm a sports writer. I cover all these events, but I consider myself a fan who writes about sports rather than a sports writer who puts up with sports. And you know, I still have that Chris Burford 88 jersey. Doesn't fit, but I still have it somewhere. And you know, I've got in my home office, I've got a poster, a 2-foot by 3-foot poster. Says "Hail to the Chiefs, 1970 Super Bowl champions." You know, it's a framed poster from 50 years ago. You know, and I every time I sit at my desk in my home office, I see that right next to my Sports Illustrated cover of Salvi holding up the World Series trophy. So I'm a sports fan, and so just reliving some of these things, getting upset when I had to read about, you know, holding Pittsburgh to 6 field goals and not being able to win that game, or, you know, not being able to force the Colts to punt, or, I mean, you name it. Some of those things were really painful, but it was so much fun to do it as a Chiefs fan. It was not work. It was a labor of love.
So in all of those heartbreaking losses for those 50 years, which one was the one that got you the most?
Oh, Christmas Day, 1971.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we've got a great picture in there of Jim Lynch and Willie Lanier walking off the Municipal Stadium field with their heads down. And, you know, nobody knew it would be 15 years before they'd even see the playoffs and then get waxed by the Jets. But one of the things that I had forgotten was that was the very last game in Municipal Stadium history.
Yeah.
And so there's no question that game, just because people who were covering the team on a regular basis, and I worked at the Star in the early 80s, and I talked to a lot of guys who were on the beat at that time, they believe hands down the 71 Chiefs team was better than the 69 Chiefs team.
Yeah, a lot of people do say that. So as we move forward, are you going to have to kind of continue to rewrite this book based on what Patrick Mahomes is doing?
I might not do one every year, but yeah, if I find somebody that wants to pay me to write, I would certainly be willing, you know, maybe at the end of this 12-year extension or whatever, maybe write about how many Super Bowls he's won in his career. That would be fun.
Where are people going to be able to find the book, David?
Well, it'll be available like all books in the local bookstores. But I would prefer they just get it from me. You know, it was a lot of fun to do this book, but if I make more money, it's more fun.
That's right.
And my website, it's just simply davidsmailbooks.com. You can get the book there. It's going to be the same price as it is in the stores. Anyone who orders before August 1st gets free shipping. And so there's incentive to get it before. We're projecting still around September 1 release date. But we've got, you know, I've got a list of people to send it to, and they can take advantage of the free shipping.
Well, there you go. David, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
My pleasure, Bob.
This truly is an incredible book. It's a must-have for all Chiefs fans. Go to davidsmalebooks.com. That's davidsmalebooks.com and order yours now. The Keys to the Kingdom, an illustrated timeline of the Kansas City Chiefs. And every Chiefs fan, no matter how big a Chiefs fan you are, you're going to learn something new about your favorite football.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.